This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting from Kima Boardwalk as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brano.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He is Blank. I am Brano. AJ's here. He's engineering. Sean is pulling double duty, all while Brian's doing nothing. Brian has the day off today.
Again.
Sean works two shifts, actually three. Sean, did you work a Dell show today?
No, I actually didn't. I would love to take credit, but no.
Well, Sean's working two shifts today.
Extra hour, though.
AJ's been out here forever, and Brian's just chilling, doing nothing, having a day off. I mean, some people just don't believe in work ethic anymore. They believed in work ethic last night in Pittsburgh, though. They did that. They made sure they got that game in yesterday in Pittsburgh.
They did. You and I were talking about the fact that because they were scheduled to move on, and I don't know if they were even scheduled to play the Pirates the rest of the year.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So you had to get it in. And 3 hours later, they certainly did. I came up with the solution that I think that they should look into, which is the Astros' their Twitter account. Or their social media, right before the first pitch, should let everybody know. Because I kept checking, and you know, with the channel guide, unless they change the channel guide for the DVR, it won't record the game because it says Astros whatever.
Yeah, my DVR got jacked up.
Yeah, and that screwed everything up because I kept going back and forth, going, are they close to starting yet? Are they close to starting yet? And it kept saying in the little bug in the corner said rain delay, Space City Home Network, but they didn't say there's never ever an update. It was annoying.
I feel like this might be a boomer take.
I'm just saying it would be for all the people that were sitting there probably doing similar things, like I wonder if they're going to play this game or not. It would be great if either the Shin and or Astros said, hey, we're playing baseball, first pitch is at whatever, yeah. And then you'd know that they were going to play.
I'll be honest with you. I had no trouble knowing what time the game was.
Okay.
The Astros tweeted at 8:19 p.m. that the first pitch was at 9.
I'm watching NBA Finals. I'm watching my daughter's.
But you said they should tweet it. They tweeted it.
I think they should. But
They did.
Okay. Well, I think it should have been closer to right when it was happening. Because it's never. You know how they
such
are with
deadlines. Boomer tank.
You know how, no, it isn't. You know how they are with deadlines? A lot. They're never. Most time they don't hit it right on the button. They're guesstimating based on the weather.
I mean, so do we need like a window of time for them to tweet this out? Like, what is the sweet spot here? Like 15 minutes
before?
Yes,
I was going to say within 15 minutes.
All right,
it'd be
so you fine. Need a 15-minute heads up, not a 40-minute heads up.
Correct.
Okay. I'm with you on the Shin thing. Like, I don't feel like they do a great job of like, okay, the game's going to start here. Like when they're in delay, which is tough for them to do. Like it's a bad spot to be in. But maybe you could put up like a little watermark in the lower third,
yeah.
Like first pitch, 9 o'clock or something like that.
Did you see the guide, and the guide says,
"Oh, the guide's screwed. The guide has no chance."
The guide says the game, so you're like, okay, click on the game, and then you instantly see a fishing show, or you see like Astros on deck, and then real faintly, the bug in the top right corner says, "Astro or Shin rain delay." We're like, okay.
It would be nice if they could throw in a little watermark lower third on the Shin that says, hey, first pitch, whatever. Like that, I think that would be good. I have to push back on the Twitter thing, though.
It's fine.
they gave you plenty of heads up.
Okay. I mean, I just, like I said, that's just my own personal preference. That would be nice if it had, if you know, want to take note of it, great.
You could turn on Astros Twitter notifications and you would have known.
Okay. I'll do that.
Yeah, you could have done that. Do you want them to send, like, the pigeon carrier?
No, because I have a cell phone, and I do have the internet, and I have access to social media, so I'm fine.
Well, what did you think of the game?
I mean, I'm glad that they played it. I mean, Fromber was fantastic. We were talking about we didn't think another pitcher for the Astros was going to strike out 12 guys, but he did his best. I mean, his curveball was nasty. He was unbelievable. The movement on a lot of his pitches is filthy, and it was fun to watch. And the offense got going a little bit. So, overall, I was pleased with all of it. The only thing that sucks is, you know, they got a quick turnaround for tonight, but you got the W. You won another series. You increased your lead in first place in the division, so all's well that ends well.
I nerded out a little bit on Baseball Savant, looking at some of Framber Valdez's like spin rate and stuff. First off, he had 23 whiffs in this game, which is a stupid number.
Yep.
He had 18 curveballs of greater than 3,000 RPMs. 3,000's elite. He had 18 of them. Framber Valdez is a freak show.
Even his sinker and the majority of his pitches have some kind of most lefties do. But the tail, the drop, and the movement on the majority of his pitches is fantastic.
It's elite.
Yeah,
I mean, let's call it what it is. Like, Framber Valdez's stuff is elite. He said through an interpreter after the game that the game plan was more strikeouts.
Got him.
Like,
mission accomplished.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to come into this game and try to strike out more, which was something we talk about with Framber. Like, Framber kind of does what Roy Oswalt did, like, after the early years of his career. Because I remember Roy Oswalt, whenever he came up, he was just striking out everybody. Like, he was striking out 11, 12 a game. And then Roy Oswalt realized, okay, the pitch count's starting to add up. I'm not going deep into games. I'm going to start pitching to some soft contact. And that's whenever he would start going deeper into games. Framber does that. Framber usually pitches to soft contact, gets a bunch of ground balls. But when Framber wants a strikeout, Framber can get a strikeout. Like, I truly believe that if Fromber's game plan, every single – look, this is the Pirates lineup, I get that. But Framber's stuff is ridiculous. If Framber committed to, like, I'm going to chase after the strikeout championship in Major League Baseball, not to say that he would win it, but I think he'd be top 10. I really do, if he committed to it. And I don't think that he should. I'm just making a point.
I think the beauty of it is it's like the best of Lance McCullers' curveball, but with movement on all of his other pitches as well. And I think that maybe it's just being right-handed in some cases because, I mean, when I used to throw, I had a natural tail on a lot of my pitches being, for some reason, left-handed.
What do you think your RPM was?
I don't know.
3,000's elite.
Yeah,
like 3,200 maybe?
No. Yeah, not even close. But real, you know, just looking at it and watching it, you know, watching some of it again this morning. But the movement on every pitch is just it hunts down hitters in so many different ways, and it's so effective that you got to love what he brings. It's got to be frustrating as hell for a hitter because even the straight stuff, it ain't straight, and it's right where it needs to be.
Yeah, he's filled. He was on a different level yesterday. I think he was a little ticked off knowing that they were going to get to Cleveland late. 23 whiffs, 18 curveballs of 3,000 RPMs, greater than 3,000 RPMs. He was fantastic. That's the storyline there. LaGraza was great. Abreu was dirty too. I mean, the Pirates stink, but Abreu... Yeah. Three up, three down, strikes out the side. And then Astros almost went with Caleb Ort with a four-run lead until they – or almost went with Hader with a four-run lead until they put up the two spot in the ninth, thanks to Isaac Paredes from Mexico. And then they went with Caleb Ort. But yeah, the bullpen did its thing, too.
I did not want to see Hader.
Same.
Four-run lead. I'm like, what are we doing right now? Like, I understand that, you know, you might think it's on the outside window of comfortable, but four runs, ninth inning, you can still – have someone if you need someone else, but I don't want to waste my closer in a game that you seem to already have at hand, and it is the Pirates. And thankfully, the home run allowed him to stay. He still got, I would assume he got hot, not just warm.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have used him.
He got up again in the ninth after Ort, like, found a little bit of trouble. Like, he started to throw a little bit. No, I mean, this goes to a conversation we have a lot. I mean, even Blum was a little critical of the idea of getting Hader up. Like, hey, he mentioned it. He was like, you know, I don't love this whenever you're playing the Pirates. Like, can it be somebody else? I'm not a fan of using your leverage guys up four runs.
Not either.
Like, if it's in the playoffs, okay, yeah, I totally understand. But, like, this goes back to what Joe Espada was saying in spring training. Joe Espada says, I worked Brian Abreu more than I wanted to work him last year. Okay, well, what's the game plan to not work him as much this year? The easy answer is we're just not going to use him in four-run leads. That probably cut – I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at how many times that he appeared in a game with a four-run lead. But I would say that would cut down like 5 to 7 games probably.
You would think, right? And I think that he has enough choices in his bullpen that are still above-average pitchers, at least this season, mm-hmm. that you don't have to worry about a Whitley blowing up. And you can still have other guys. I think Brian King's a guy that could get, you know, outs for you. So that you didn't have to use those two guys. I think there are guys that he could turn to that are effective enough that four-run lead should be safe in most cases. We know that things happen. But I don't like using those guys in a situation like that because you know you're going to be in enough situations where you're going to use them. And you're playing a better baseball team this weekend that has a better lineup that you're probably going to use those guys in multiple games.
Yeah, I mean, good chance.
Yeah.
Like, you can't predict the future, no. Right? But, no, I mean, I rather have them rested and ready to go than using them in four-run games. But that's what they do. And this dates back to Dusty. Like, Dusty would use his leverage guys up by four because one swing of the bat could tie the game. That was, like, the logic there. Like, oh, if they load him up, one swing of the bat ties it up. And he wanted to use his leverage guys there no matter what. I'm not a fan of that. Is it nuanced? Is it nitpicky? Yes, probably. When the manager's saying that he's trying to reduce the workload of Brian Abreu and he's still using him in four-run games, I feel like that's a contradiction. Like, that's the natural time not to use him as often. Is it going to reduce his workload by 25%? No, but it's going to reduce his workload by about four or five games, and I think that's worth it. So I'm with you on that 100%. And Blummers was critical of it, too.
And I like the fact that the Astros announcers are not afraid to be critical of those situations, especially a baseball guy that knows baseball and played baseball. That's exactly
Kellis?
No. I mean, but and Todd knows baseball, obviously,
no, he does.
In his family. But from a Blummer perspective, he should have the freedom to be able to do that, and they shouldn't be mad about it because it's something that we're talking about, that people that watch the game should be talking about, because we know that they got overused. We knew that most of the year last year, Brian Abreu led the league in appearances, or he was in top two. And that's something that you have to be concerned about, because then he gets gassed out by the time he gets to the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Fortunately, the bats scored a couple, and Hader wasn't used, but it was up. You're right. Like, that's – I don't want to use the word Peter Gammons uses, but, like, you don't remember?
Uh-uh.
You don't remember Peter Gammons'
usage? I know who
usage?
Peter Gammons is.
No, I know but that, but you don't remember his word usage of getting a guy hot but not using him in a game?
No.
It's dry humping.
Oh, God. I've never him of all people.
Peter, I'm quoting
I
here. Those are not
that,
my
but he
words.
Use that term?
Yeah.
Wow.
You don't remember that?
I don't.
The Wheelhouse got a kick out of it. They would like Cody would giggle every time somebody brought it up.
Okay.
He would. I'm being for real.
You can imagine if that happened right after someone punted one into the coffin corner.
Yeah, I don't think Peter Gammons talks a whole lot about punting, but
no
it'd be funny.
That, yeah.
713-780 ESPN Killer Bees. Lots to get to today. Great time to be had out here in Kima. Having a fantastic time. If you're in the area, swing on by at the arcade here on the Kima Boardwalk, which is always fun. Joe has has Junior out here.
He does.
They disappeared. I don't know who's getting a kick out of the game's board, Joe or Junior. It looked like Joe was having a good time though.
Joe's got a seatbelt on. He's in full driver's ed mode.
They have a Mario Kart game though, which I wanted to play. I'm a big fan of Mario Kart.
I think they're side by side right now in the driver's
seat. Oh, they're over there?
Yeah.
Have you ever played Mario Kart?
My kids have. I have not.
Really?
Yep.
Man. AJ, have you played Mario Kart?
Yeah, when I was younger. Yeah.
When you were younger?
Uh-huh.
Like, so probably Nintendo 64 edition?
Yeah.
I had the one on Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Kart. Yeah. Toad is my guy. I'm a big Toad guy. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Lots to get to. Todd Callis will be joining us at 4 o'clock. We'll get into is Halliburton the greatest basketball player ever? We'll discuss that a little bit later. Shrouded in mystery. What are we shrouded in mystery in today? Continue talking about the Astros as well. How about the offensive side of things yesterday? And how about what happened before the game? Dana Brown getting heated with the Buckaroo manager and all the staffers, which very interesting to see. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN 975, Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Are you looking for something fun to do? Of course you are. And if you're looking for something fun to do, what you should be doing is going out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. It is a fantastic time. I was out there last week. I'm a little bummed out that I'm not going to be out there this week, too. We had a great time. I drove there after the show on Friday. That's the beauty of Two Creeks Crossing. You can still work throughout the week and get out there for the weekend with no problem. I got there pretty quick. I got there about 15, 20 minutes later than I would normally get home. That's how close Two Creeks Crossing is to the city of Houston. Just 90 minutes from downtown Houston, and you're going to have a great time whether you're hiking the 92-acre property, whether you're kayaking, whether you're playing some pickleball. Maybe you just hang it out inside the cabin, inside the treehouse, cooking up a steak or two. Who knows? Whatever you want to do for rest and relaxation, this is the spot. I mean, it's a getaway. You have the trees all around you. You got the wildlife you don't see in the cities. And if you like to fish, they got some of the best fishing in Texas on their Two Creeks as well. You have the kids. We'll take them out to the catch and release pond. They have a pool there. They had live music while we were there as well, a food truck. that was delicious, too. So get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Book that stay now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing, great outdoors. They love to take care of your customers. I mentioned that they had the live music. They had the food truck. They have a little ice house there with a bar, which is nice to have as well. From glamping to cabins, we stayed in the treehouse. That was awesome. Or just pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for everybody. Book your stay now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting from Kima Boardwalk as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
If I were to win those e-bikes, I'm giving them to Josh Hader and Brian King. That way they don't have to walk around the ranch. They showed it on the game yesterday, but my DVR was messed up, so I couldn't go back and clip it. Yeah, but I'll get it. I'll get it. I'll try to get it by Monday. But Summer Circuit is back. We're out here today on the Kima Boardwalk inside the arcade. Join us every week as we visit different areas all over the Houston area. And each week you can register to win our grand prize of the summer, a pair of brand-new e-bikes from Power On Electric Bicycle Company, $4,000 value. To register, all you have to do is stop by the promo table, Victoria, over there today. And sign up there. This week we'll be hanging out at the Galaxy Adventure Party Room. Come join us right now. As we're here until 6 o'clock, you can find the entire Summer Circuit schedule at ESPN975.com. I was going to say something, but I lost my train of thought.
Those bikes are really badass. That's a hell of a prize.
Yeah, it is.
And, I mean, all you got to do is come out and spend a few minutes with AJ, and then you get to fill out the entry form, and you got a good shot.
Yeah, you don't even have to talk to AJ.
Not really.
You just have to say, you don't even talk to us. You don't have to
go to the promo table.
Yeah, just go to Victoria. Hey, can I sign up to register? And you do, and you have a chance to win. Big C won the thing the other day. Not the other day, last summer
year,
or two summers ago.
The barbecue grill?
Yeah, I think it was 2 summers ago, maybe. I can't remember.
That's right.
But it's a Killer Bee summer. You already know that. 713-780-ESP at HRNP, listener line. We mentioned the offense was good. How about these rookies? I Branham foot-in-mouthed the rookies to a good night offensively.
I was going to congratulate you for that.
Yep, I did it. Cam Smith had a knock. I mean, 1 for 4, nothing to sneeze at. It was a single. I mean, Cam Smith doesn't hit extra bases. He's allergic to extra bases. But he was 1 for 4, knocked in a run, scored a run, and then Jacob Melton had a 2-RBI single going the other way. First career RBIs for the Oregon State product.
I like it a lot. I mean, he went the other way. He shows that, you know, in terms of his discipline at the plate and, you know, now a multi-hit game. He's got great speed. He's got the ability to play good outfield. I think this is a guy that, you got to find a spot in the lineup for as long as he's playing the way he's playing. And there's a chance that with all this talk about the Astros need more left-handed bats and, you know, do they go out and get one, you got a guy right now that might work right into the mix for them to be a guy that they can actually lean on and count on.
Not in the lineup tonight. The Astros are facing a lefty, LT Allen. What?
You see some of the numbers on how – no, I'm sorry. I was waiting till you were
done. You looked at me funny.
Yeah, no, because that triggered something, and I heard John and Lance mention it as well this morning. They have hardly seen lefties this year.
Yeah.
I think Pena's got, like, less than 50 at-bats against lefties, and almost all the guys. It's just really rare that they haven't faced more lefties.
I think there's also the teams realize that the Astros are so right-handed heavy, and that whenever they have the option to have wiggle room, they'll use the wiggle room. Like, you're not going to change the date on Paul Skeens,
right?
But if they had, like, you know, the Astros have a to-be-announced on Sunday. So, like, they have a wiggle room whether they could use McCullers if they had to. They could bring up somebody else to spot start that. So, when teams have those little wiggle dates, knowing the Astros are so right-handed heavy, they usually start the righties in that spot. It's still a fluke, but I think that does come into play a little bit there as well. But, yeah, getting a lefty today. First time we've seen Brendan Rodgers in a lineup for a while.
Long time.
Yeah. They go Pena, Paredes, Altuve, Walker, Myers to the five spot, Caratini, and then Smith, Dubon, Rodgers. So, your standard lineup against righties.
Yeah,
what you would expect.
I like the fact that you're getting closer when you get Yordan back to a lineup right now. If Melton just kind of holds his own, where you could have Melton, Caratini, and Yordan in the lineup to at least have three lefty bats in a lineup when you need to.
Yeah. Ocho, did y'all see the defensive play made to throw out Isak Paredes by Tomball's own Cabrian Kobe Hayes? I think he made up the middle name. But, yeah, that was a heck of a play. Yeah. He's one of the better defensive third basemen in baseball. Problem is he's never lived up to it offensively.
Yeah,
offensively. He was supposed to
struggle.
He was a hot shot prospect.
He really was.
I think he went to Concordia Lutheran.
Okay.
Shane Boz went to Concordia Lutheran. I want to say Cabrian Hayes also went to Concordia Lutheran. He's the son of, Charles Hayes?
Charlie Hayes,
the third baseman for the
Phillies.
Yeah, I remember him with the Yankees. Remember he backed up Brocious?
Yes, he did.
I want to say did he catch a foul ball to clinch the World Series?
Brocious did.
I think it might have been Brocious. Yeah, I might be confusing that. Yeah. I don't know how I would confuse Scott Brocious with Charlie Harris.
The resemblance is uncanny.
Yeah. Cam WAR is back up to 1.1, says Israel. Yeah, kind of like his hits. He's allergic to extra base hits. That's fourth on the team, says Israel. About Cam Smith. No one dislikes Cam Smith, Israel. We're just wondering that if a 1.1 WAR in the first 2.5 months of the season is worth an extra year of service. That's the conversation, Israel. We all like Killa Cam. Texter, didn't Joel Blank used to be the voice of the Rockets? Yeah, kind of.
Not the voice.
A voice.
A voice. Yes.
I hate. Have I ever told you
I hate that phrase so
much. He's the voice of the Texan. No. D'Amico's the voice of the Texans. Nick Cow. Hannah is the voice of the Texans.
Gino loved it.
Most guys do.
Yeah, Gene Peterson had it printed on his business. Went back in the days of business cards.
Yeah.
Gene didn't have radio play-by-play announcer. It said the voice of the Houston Rockets.
Silly. I mean, people are going to say it to you. Like, I mean, they're just going to be, hey, because it is like a moniker or a nickname. I hate when, like, the actual person uses it. I think it's so arrogant. But, I mean, radio guys and play-by-play guys are super arrogant.
Yep.
Like, they all have major egos. 713-780-ESPN. Fromber's currently tied for 11th with Hunter Brown and AL strikeouts, says a texter. There you go. He doesn't even chase strikeouts that often. He's usually trying to pitch to soft contact.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's tried to take speed off of his fastball, which topped out at 98 last night, which is also.
I don't usually love him having a lot of velo, though.
And he's been trying to adjust that and take a little off, so he does have more movement on his pitches. But he's capable of throwing every pitch in his repertoire to be a plus pitch, and he was on his game last night.
Let's see what else I have here. Oh, yeah, the weather stuff before the game.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dana Brown yelling at everybody that he could yell at. What'd you make of all that?
One, I like Dana Brown showing some emotion. It's the kind of stuff we talked about even with a Joe Espada. Because Espada was just sitting there with his arms crossed, nodding his head like, okay, I'm going to go along with whatever they say. And I love it from the standpoint of if you're going to be the general manager of this team and you know that you're in the middle of a road trip where you've got to get – it's a getaway game and you got to go somewhere else, that if you're not hearing what you like – You owe it to yourself, you owe it to your team first and foremost, your organization, to put your foot down and say, hey, come on, man. Like, we got to do something and do it quickly if we're going to make a decision here because we've got to get to another city and we have an early game again the next night. You and I were talking about it before we even knew it was going to be 3 hours when we were looking at the radar. And I like Dana Brown kind of getting a little bit more emotional and getting into it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it too. Like, I like that he's going to bat for the boys. I like that he's, like, trying to have their best interest in mind. I'm not sure what he's trying to accomplish by yelling at the Pirates manager.
It just, we weren't there, so we don't know what was said. But, if guys can be catty. Guys can be a little bit, you know, smart-assed in things the way they deliver a message. And maybe he didn't like it. And because the Pirates stayed home. They open up another homestand for the weekend. They didn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they were kind of, you know, relaxed and saying, we're going to start it when we start it.
Yeah, but the Pirates have no say in it. This is umpires and this is Major League Baseball officials that are working together. Like, they're not asking Don Kelly, hey, when do you want to start the game?
But the umpires, the umpires weren't, at least the discussion that I saw, the umpires weren't saying a whole lot. It did seem to be between Kelly and Dana. And they did seem to be – it seemed like something Kelly said struck a nerve with Dana, and then Dana was very demonstrative and everything after that. And I don't know what that could be, but at the same time, I mean, you've got a first-place club that's in the middle of a road trip, and I like the fact that he's going to stick up for his team.
No, I do too. I would like to know what set him off there. Like, I know he was frustrated with the idea that we can't get out of town. Like, I know that. But I just wonder, like, why he's yelling at the Pirates manager. I just wonder what was said.
Maybe it's something to do with the pitchers and stuff too. If there was a chance that you're going to get these guys hot and you're going to get them warmed up, like Fromber, and then all of a sudden.
Well, that's the reason they didn't start the game, and it didn't rain for
right
an hour and a half.
But you never know. Like, if something pops up or something like that, and then, you know, he might be fighting for the fact that he doesn't want to get a guy up unless we're dead set certain we're starting at this time.
Well, I mean, at the time that they were having the argument, the rain had cleared, and they were starting to take the tarp off.
Yeah, I'm just guessing, because I don't know at that point, like, because the I think it was the Pirates' assistant general manager was right behind Kelly.
Yeah.
And they seemed to be all on a unified front, nodding their heads whenever he was talking, and then when Dana took off and started going off, they all kind of went, whoa. Might have struck a nerve there.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was. I liked it, too. I really don't think that that could have been avoided other than playing it earlier. Like, that was the only thing to me. Like, if one, it's kind of weird that you're playing an evening getaway game that's usually not, you know, it doesn't happen a ton. I guess it happens sometimes. And it's easy to do between Pittsburgh and Cleveland because apparently it's only like an hour flight.
Yeah, it's an hour.
So it's like, okay, well, it's close. You can get away with the evening game. But the only way they could have really done anything differently, I think, is to have started the game earlier. But the early forecast only had like a 50% chance of rain, so it's really unlucky. I'm glad they didn't start the game at 5:40 or 6:40 Eastern.
You probably lose proper at some point in the next rain delay.
Like Josh Reddick was complaining that, well, you know, we had the tarp on the field and it didn't rain for an hour and a half. Well, if you use Fromber and then all of a sudden the skies fall down in the fourth inning, Fromber's toast. So I don't want there to be a delay in the middle of a game. And then it, like, there, Chandler Roman's article today, quotes from Dana, they were talking about this. They were, like, overlapping the Pirates schedule and the Astros schedule to see if there was a way that they could, like, travel to Pittsburgh on an off day. And I don't think that that's worth the trouble. Like, ultimately, I think this was in the best interest of the Astros.
Yes, for
just
sure.
Get the game out of the way. Don't worry about blowing an off day in the future and actually traveling back into Pittsburgh. Fromber made quick work of Pittsburgh. Yes, you got home late, and, you know, that stinks. And I do think it's a factor, and it's not great. And that's why Dana Brown was frustrated. But I don't think that there was an alternative to happened yesterday.
Of everything you said, and then the other alternative is they push it to the end of the season to see if it's necessary. And the last thing you want to do as you're really getting ready for the postseason is to have to rush out and find a way to play a one-game series on the East Coast when you're trying to get your players ready for the playoffs and get them as much rest as possible. So this seemed like the best-case scenario of all the possibilities. It just sucks that, you know, the three-hour rain delay pushed him into Cleveland at about 5 a.m.
Yeah, they were talking about in season, not into season.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, a lot of times these things, they will push it to the end of the season, and then it becomes unnecessary because it's not going to change the standings or the playoff seeds.
Can you do that now whenever? Because they go straight into the wild card.
But I'm saying in the last week or so of the season, they've blown off a game saying we're not going to make up that game because we don't need it.
Yeah, if it's a rain out like the last series,
right.
Last two series, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I think that they made the right decision by playing. I certainly understand everybody being mad. Blummers was, he was ticked off on the broadcast. He was super annoyed and agitated by, he was very agitated by everything that was going on. Pretty interesting stuff. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Fromber was great yesterday. I've been thinking about this for a while, and I think I'm ready to make the proclamation. Fromber Valdez is the greatest left-handed starting pitcher in Houston Astros history. Am I wrong? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting from Kima Boardwalk as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Shout out Josh from Seabrook swinging by to say hello to the Killer Bees. Said where are he? He said that we're his third favorite show in this time slot in the last 5 years.
Great.
No, he didn't say that. I made that up, but it's funny. The Twitter deposit just hit the account. Tap water on me.
Twitter deposit?
Yeah, Twitter paid me for my tweets.
Oh, nice.
And today, they hit the account today.
Okay.
So if you guys want some tap water, I'm buying. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I believe that Fromber Valdez is the greatest left-handed starter in Houston Astro history. I've been sitting on this for a while. I've been thinking about this for a while. I was ready to go here last week, and then we just didn't get to it. I was like, let's wait for another Fromber start. And then he pitched really well, so it kind of helps out my cause a little bit here. There's a long list of, like solid lefties. There isn't like this. There's not 50 great lefties in Astro history, but there's a handful of really good ones. If you wanted to go just straight peak, I mean, Randy Johnson was obviously very good, but he did it for 3 months, so like doesn't have the volume. If you want to go way back, you can go to Mike Cuellar.
I've heard the
Remember
name.
Mike Cuellar?
I've heard the name, yes.
He had a 2.74 ERA with the Astros, which is the best left-handed ERA in franchise history for a starter, but was only 37-36.
Okay.
And a lot of his best years actually came once he went to Baltimore, which he was traded with Elijah Johnson and Enzo Hernandez for John Mason and Kurt Byfary. So, like, probably the worst trade in Astros history that we never talk about.
Okay.
Bob Knepper could be in the mix here. Bob Knepper won 93 games as an Astro, which is the most ever for a left-handed starter in franchise history. Problem here is that he had a losing record. He was 93-100 and had a 3.66 ERA.
ERA is good, though.
I mean, 3.66 is okay.
For 100 games, I mean, it's pretty decent.
I mean, in that era, pitching in the dome?
That's true. The dome does factor in.
I mean, it's not bad, but we're talking about greatest of all time.
Yeah, look, there's three to come to my mind just because it's been.
Let me finish this part.
I'm just saying because I didn't see Bob Knepper pitch in the dome.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't either. Bob Knepper was before my time, but Knepper also never finished with like a top 10 Cy Young year. So like even like relative to his era, he was never in the. He never had a top 10 Cy Young finish year. Period. So I think that hurts his cause a little bit here too. How about recently? I think Wandy Rodriguez could be a mention. Not the top, but a mention. Wandy had 80 wins in his Astro career, which is the second most, but had a losing record, 80-84, and also had an ERA north of 4. Mike Hampton was pretty dang good, 76-50, 3.59 ERA. His best Cy Young year was in 1999, had a second-place Cy Young year.
He was one of the ones on my mind.
Andy Pettit, 37-26, 3.38 ERA. He had, I think it was 3 years in Houston. His best Cy Young year in Houston was a fifth place in 2005. Now, there's only been one left-handed Cy Young in Houston Astro franchise history. And this is where I think the conversation is at. Is
Beard.
Right, yeah. Yes. Thank you for that. I didn't know who it was. Dallas Keuchel. To me, it's those two. Yeah. I think it's Dallas Keuchel and Framber Valdez that's the conversation. Dallas Keuchel, the only left-handed Cy Young in Astro franchise history, 76-63, 3.66 ERA. Framber Valdez, after last night, is 74-45, so he has two fewer wins, but he has way less losses. He has a 3.28 ERA, so that's what, 0.40 better than Keuchel. He has his WAR is like equal. It's 17.4 Keuchel, 17.3 Framber. And while Framber doesn't have a Cy Young, he has three top 10 finishes and four top 11 finishes. So, and Framber also has more postseason wins, seven
that's
to Dallas Keuchel's
go.
Four.
Yep. Yep.
So when you look at Framber versus Keuchel, I'm going Framber over Keuchel because of the consistency over a body of work. And I would argue he had more playoff success. So he doesn't have the Cy Young, doesn't have Keuchel's peak, maybe not even Randy Johnson's peak. But because of the longevity and the consistency and the volume, I believe Framber Valdez is the greatest left-handed starter in Houston Astros history.
Yeah, you look at it, and the names that were on my list were that I had seen were Wandy, Hampton, and Keuchel going up against Framber. But you also got to factor in the fact that Framber looks like he's not anywhere close to being done from now to the rest of the rest of the regular season. He's probably going to keep stacking and racking a lot of wins and have good success. I look at it and from the same standpoint, it's going to come down to Cy Youngs versus postseason success. If you tell me that Keuchel's got a Cy Young, but you say that Framber's got more wins in the playoffs and at the biggest moments, I don't know that it's a wash, but it says that Keuchel had one really, really good year, and then when you start talking about how many top 10 finishes and top 5 finishes he had for Cy Young, I would probably lean Framber.
Okay. So we you agree with me?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And I look, the older school guys, I don't know. The other thing that kind of becomes evident with all this is it's surprising with all the Astros that had some really good pitchers back in the day that those were the best lefties that this franchise has ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is the list. Cuellar, Knepper, Wandy, Hampton, Pettit, Randy Johnson, if you want to throw in the big unit. I think it's fair to have him in the conversation because he was great in that short period of time. He's never going to win this conversation, but because he was great, and he does have the highest peak, I believe. Even though Keuchel won a Cy Young back in 2015, I will take Randy Johnson's peak after trading for him in 1998 than I would Keuchel. I think he was 11-1.
11-1? I was going to say, if you just want to take the best lefty to ever throw in an Astros uniform in terms of their repertoire, their pitches, their domination, Randy Johnson's obviously in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't think Pettitte played here long enough for him to be in the mix and be in the conversation.
I mean, 3 years, probably not. Probably
I was surprised when you told me that was the year I think he and Clemens both had really good years.
Oh, five, and the year they went to the World Series.
That he was in the, was he top, would you say top five?
He was fifth, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fifth.
But I think it's definitely a two-guy race. I think it's Keuchel and it's Fromber.
And if you were pressed, you would go Fromber over Keuchel.
And what's the difference in losses?
Fromber has 45 career losses. Keuchel has 63. I mean, it's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, as opposed to the difference of two in wins. Yeah, if you go 20 more losses, yeah, I'm leaning Fromber.
Yeah, Fromber's at 74 wins. Keuchel's at 76. So, yeah. But if you were to add the postseason. Because Fromber has 7 postseason wins, Keuchel has 4. So if you put Keuchel's 4 postseason wins with a 76 regular season, you're looking at 80. You put Fromber's 7 wins with his 74 wins, he's actually at 81 wins as an Astro.
More
with almost
wins,
twice as many
losses.
In the regular season.
Yeah, the only thing that Keuchel's got that pushes it his way is the Cy Young.
He does. Keuchel has the Cy Young, but that was his only year as an Astro.
Right.
Where he finished with a Cy Young vote at all. He actually had a year...
He went 20.
After the Astros.
He went 20 that year?
I want to say it was, I think he hit 20 right on the nose, wasn't it?
Because I thought it was 20, and then when you factor that in, did he have just one really good year? As opposed to Fromber having the consistency of having multiple really good years.
Dallas Keuchel never finished on a Cy Young leaderboard in Houston other than that one year.
Yep.
Now, he did have a fifth place Cy Young year in Chicago as a White Sox in the COVID year, but that doesn't count.
Nope.
Like we're only counting his Astros. But Keuchel was a two-time All-Star in Houston. Like he had other good years. Like in 17, he was 14-5 with a 2.90 ERA. Like that's a good year.
That is.
14 was the second most wins he had in a season. Second most wins that he had in a season. Now his career high as an Astro was 20. Fromber's had 17, 15, 12, 11, but he's right up there with Keuchel. He's a couple wins shy of Keuchel in the regular season. Passes him if you want to include the postseason.
It's pretty close.
It is very close.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's razor thin between the two.
Agreed.
But I give the slight edge to Fromber. People, too, were putting Fromber a little bit ahead of Keuchel as well because of the postseason stuff. Like, Keuchel wasn't bad in the playoffs, but he didn't rack up 7 wins like Fromber has racked up 7 wins. And Fromber also started a World Series clinching game in 2012 or 2022 and won that game.
Yeah, and I just think that when you look at the two of them, no matter what, if you just wipe the slate clean and said, who do you have more confidence in a one-and-done situation in a big, big-time game, Keuchel or Fromber? I'm leaning Fromber because of what we just talked about in the opening segment. All of his pitches move. His fastball is above average. Keuchel's fastball was okay. But I just think that from the variety of stuff, the movement of stuff, the domination of stuff, and because it's so close, I lean Fromber.
713-780-ESPN. Is Fromber the greatest left-handed starter in Astro franchise history? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Kima Boardwalk on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Your home for the NBA Finals is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting from Kima Boardwalk as part of ESPN Houston Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, Kima Boardwalk. Texture, I'm on Team Fromber, but you can't hold the losses against Keuchel. He was on some terrible teams. That's a good counterpoint. That's a fair point. Because he was on the 12. He made 16 starts in 12, terrible. 22 starts in 13, terrible. 29 starts in 14, terrible.
Those were the 100 loss teams?
I think 12 and 13 they were. They lost 90 in 14, and then they started winning in 15.
Right.
Now, Fromber, like, I mean, Dallas did pitch in some of the golden era. Like, right, he won a championship in 17. He was on the 18 team that was loaded. That rotation was loaded. It had him, Cole, Verlander, McCullers, and Morton. That in my opinion, was the best starting rotation in Astros history.
Who compares it in 20 in 19 or 22?
They traded for Greinke. So they had Greinke with Cole and Verlander, but McCullers didn't pitch that year because he was hurt. Morton left in free agency. Right. Keuchel left in free agency. So, like, they were getting some spot starts from, like, random dudes in the back. Like, I remember Peacock started a few games.
That's right, yep.
Like, he was in the rotation for a little
bit.
He was
good for about a year and a half.
Yeah. No, he was great out of the pen.
Yeah, out of the pen. Like, no matter where they used him.
Out of the pen.
Yep.
Like, I love Brad Peacock. But the rotation in 18 was better than 19. The lineup in 19 was better than 18. Because now you add Jordan, you add Tucker to the back, like, last 2 months of the year.
Those, the two unsung guys I'll always give, I don't think they get enough credit for just the versatility and the effectiveness, are Peacock and McHugh. McHugh, I used to love seeing McHugh.
He might have started some games.
I think
in
he
19.
Did. I was going to say, I thought he started some games. When he needed a starter, he could be a spot starter. When you needed him to get some guys out, he could get some guys out. When you needed him to go multiple innings, he'd go multiple innings. And his stuff was filthy there for a small window of time of a year, a couple years for the Astros. But he was good. Peacock was good, too.
Yeah, Peacock? Oh, yeah, they had Wade Miley.
Oh, that's
they had
right.
Wade Miley, yep. And then Fromber came up that year, but only started in 8 games. Like he wasn't Fromber yet.
That's right.
Wade, he was. Arcidi started 7 games that year.
Was Miley only here for a year?
I want to say he was.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Yeah, which was. I mean, he was pretty dang
good. He was
that
good.
Year, yep. Sub 4 ERA, but I'll go starting rotation 18 over 19. Underrated starting rotation were like the years they had Clemens, Pettit, Royo. Like that was pretty dang
that's
good.
Filthy.
And then like if you go back, like didn't Ryan and Richard share a rotation
they did.
For a time? Like that's pretty nasty too.
Yeah, Ryan Richards, and it, was it either Negro or...
Sounds right.
I don't know if Mike Scott was ever in...
Scott and Ryan were on the 86 team, but not, that was after Richard, though.
Yeah, that's still... Those two guys alone are pretty damn good.
Yeah, so like they you go back to like what kind of predates us. They had some really good rotations as well. Those are more like my lifetime, like 18. And then the Clemens, Pettit, Royo was pretty dang good, too. I wonder how long... I don't know. Let's see. I'm not sure that Richard... See, what was J.R. Richards' final year in Houston? Richards' final year in Houston was 80 before
that's
the stroke
year? Okay.
And Nolan Ryan's first year in Houston was 80. So they only shared the rotation in 1980. And they only did it for
partial?
They did it 17 starts for Richards.
Because he collapsed in the dome, right?
Yeah.
On the mound?
I believe that's right, yes. And then later was homeless.
He was living
under
the overpass.
Terrible story.
But then kind of found his way. The Astros got behind him. Everybody got behind him, and he passed too soon.
Yeah, that guy was a freak. So good.
True story, I grew up, and we've got pictures of it. All I wanted was the Astros rainbow jersey with 50 on the back when I was growing up. I love J.R. Richard. His dominance, man, if he could have just, played out his full career, what a pitcher he was.
Yeah, so Richard and Nolan only shared the rotation for part of the 1980 season. So they didn't have that run. Like, how nasty would have that been for years? Well, Nolan Ryan, J.R. Richard at the top of the
good
rotation
Lord.
For multiple years.
And they're horses, too. They could go deep every game.
That might be one of the great what-ifs in Houston sports history. Like, what if J.R. Richard stays healthy, never has the stroke, and him and Nolan Ryan are dominant for maybe they still add a Mike Scott. Could you imagine?
Wow.
Nolan Ryan, J.R. Richard, Mike Scott, the same rotation, game
and
over.
And they're in the dome? Where it's a pitcher's ballpark, where everything stays in the park, God, that would have been dominant.
All right, Wandy will always be known for the click heard around the world when during the start of the World Series started by saying Roger Clemens wasn't pitching, it was going to be Wandy. Was it? I thought Clemens left the game early and Wandy relieved him.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
No, it was 2015 World Series. I thought Roger Clemens left the game early. I don't.
15, they didn't get there, right? 2005. They lost to the Royals?
05. 2005, I thought that Clemens got hurt early in one of the Chicago starts and left the game and was relieved by Wandy Rodriguez. I don't think it was a late scratch.
I don't either because I didn't get the click reference. The click heard round the world.
So I'm trying to pull it up here real quick. That's regular season. I want to say that he started the game and like left the game in the first.
In Chicago?
Yeah. So he started the game and actually pitched 2 innings. He left the game in the third. He went 2 innings, gave up 3 runs, 4 hits, left the game, and then wouldn't pitch again. That was game one. And I want to say Wandy relieved him. Yep, Wandy was the relief pitcher. Yeah,
what was
so
the injury?
It was a hamstring, I think.
Oh, yeah. I kind of remember it wasn't arm-related.
Yeah, so it wasn't a scratch before the game. It was Clemens was pitching, and he had to leave the game in the third, and then Wandy relieved him. I did remember that right. Fromber had a lot more notable first-inning playoff meltdowns than Keuchel. Okay. Like, Keuchel got hit sometimes in the playoffs,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Harris was awesome. Yeah, but he's a reliever and a righty. Wade Miley was the only Astro – was only with the Astros in 19.
Okay.
1980 Astros pitching staff was pretty good. Ryan, Richard, Negro, and Mike Scott. Okay, so Scott was on the 80 rotation. I missed that. Knepper was a good lefty for the Astros, says Ocho. We mentioned Knepper, but I don't think you can put a 3.66 ERA, 93-10, never had a top-10 Cy Young season ahead of Fromber and Keuchel.
I mean, he was good as an Astro, but he, if you want to say the greatest lefty of all time, that's where the everything matters. Everything's on the table, and those two guys have the most accolades.
Dallas had the gold glove, says a texter.
That could factor in. Fromber's never going to have one of those.
How much does that weigh into you?
Pitching is all about your arm and your effectiveness, your wins, losses, earned run average, those kind of things. Yeah, it's nice. Like, Mike Hampton was an unbelievable defender. Mike Hampton has multiple gold gloves. But Mike Hampton as a pitcher doesn't come close to those other two guys.
He could hit, too.
Oh, my good. Yes, he could.
Didn't Hampton have 100 victories for the Astros? I had Hampton at 76 wins in his Astros tenure. So not quite till 100. Really not close. That's
Rockies,
kind of like two seasons away.
And you said, didn't you say, or someone texted us in the last week or so, that he actually came back for one more year?
Yeah, I mentioned that because I was looking at – we were looking at him the other
day.
Yeah,
we were.
And, yeah, he came back in 2009 when he was 36.
And I don't remember that.
I don't either.
I just remember Rocky. He got paid, and he was Rockies and Mets, but that I don't remember him coming back.
Yeah, that Astros team was not good, though. Like, that was the 09 Astros. They weren't a good team.
Okay.
I want to say that was like Carlos Lee. They were 74-88. Their head coach was Cecil Cooper.
Oh,
Carlos Lee was
definitely
on the team.
Carlos Lee, yep.
That team wasn't awful.
Wasn't
they had
the strikeout
old king
at first base, Chris?
No, they had Berkman still.
Oh, did they? What was the guy that was either
using it? Chris Carter.
Chris Carter, there you go.
Yeah, they had Pudge at 37. They had Kaz Matsui, the anal fissures, at 33. They had Tejada, who we think was 35. They had Blum at 36. Carlos Lee was 33, and then their young guys were Born and Pence, who were both 26. That team's not awful. They were just old.
Yeah. I mean, literally, if you have those guys closer to their prime, there's some pretty good baseball players in the mix there. But, yeah, it seemed like they got everybody all, like, bunched into the same age group.
You had 30-year-old Wandy, 31-year-old Royo, and then you had the veteran Mike Hampton make 21 starts that year. I mean, that team's just old.
Yep.
It's not – I mean, they were 74-88. I guess that counts as a bad team. They fired Cooper that year.
Who was the was Lidge the closer?
I think he was already gone. No, because you said Lidge. For some reason, I heard you say Lidge, and I thought you said Wagner.
Yeah, I asked Lidge.
No, Lidge was gone. It was Valverde.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, they got rid of Lidge after.
You go to Philly?
Yeah, I think they got rid of him after the. Did he stick around one more year after the Pujols homer? Did they get rid of him after 05?
I think he had one more year here before they got rid of him. I don't think it was we got to get rid of him because of that.
And then he was awesome in Philly.
Yeah, he had good years.
Like, I think he won a he spent two more years with the Astros. He had a good year with the with the Phillies. He finished fourth in Cy Young his first year in Philly. Yeah.
That I don't remember.
41 saves, sub-2 ERA, fourth in Cy Young, eighth in MVP, Brad Lidge. He had a top-10 MVP season.
That's impressive.
Once he left
the Astros. I never would have thunk that.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. I want to agree, but does Fromber have to win a Cy Young to get that title? Let's answer that on the other side. Does Fromber have to win a Cy Young to get the titles, the greatest lefty starter in Astros history? Todd Kalas will be joining us at 4:15. We'll get to NBA Finals a little bit later. And then also, we have to discuss Shrouded in Mystery, C.J. Stroud saga. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.